Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
And I saw that bird kick a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and look back, and that's when I thought I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Monster X Radio, where X marks the spot for everything cryptid. It's Sunday, July 27th, 2014. I'm your host, Johnny Bigfoot, and with me tonight is my co-host, Crystal. How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. Our other co-host, Gunner, founder of Sasquatch Coffee, our official sponsor, is actually out on a Bigfoot investigation right now, so he won't be joining us, but he will be back next week to join us and report on Beachfoot.
And that'll be fun.
I think, did that happen this weekend?
I think so.
Yeah, it's such a low-key, low-profile invite-only event that I don't know that much about it.
Yeah, I thought I had seen some updates from there weekend.
Okay, so what's happening in Bigfoot news? We'll talk a little news and then we'll get to our guest. I know last week we talked about Dax Rushlow sent his casts from Salt Fork Park to Dr. Meldrum for analysis.
Yes.
And Meldrum did get back to him on those.
He did, and it seems as though the finds weren't favorable for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
According to Meldrum.
No, that happens.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense. I mean, since they were right in the campground, that they would be human.
Right.
You know,
and now
a...
there was a second... Now, I don't think that it was cast, or maybe I'm confused, but there was a supposed 16-inch print that was photographed. Is that right? But not cast?
I'm not sure. Yeah. It's all confusing. He sent two casts, and the one picture, you know, it's next to a 12-inch ruler. You know, and it kind of appears to be 16 inches, but the casting material overlays a couple inches, and they were taken in mud. So mud can make the tracks appear bigger. I'm thinking that's the 16, which really looks about like a 12 or a 13.
Right.
Which
they said that it didn't measure up and that it was also most likely human.
Yeah, and that's not that out of the ordinary, a 12-inch foot. I mean, and it, especially if you're in mud. I found some dog tracks in the mud. Someone called me and reported some possible dog man tracks, and due to the area and just proximity to urban development. I mean, and I've seen dogs back there. It looked like a dog print. It was just huge, though. I don't. It was like 6 inches wide, but it was in the mud. So you know, you're going to have that push forward, that spreading out effect, which you also can get in snow. Tracks will look bigger as well.
Right. Well, that's funny to me, because that was always a question that I had, was with Dogman, whether or not their feet were human-like or actual paws of a dog. Because I think I've heard it both ways as far as Dogman goes.
Yeah, I think it can kind of go both ways. I haven't seen that many actual tracks. There's a few that were cast from Michigan. Otherwise, it's pretty much just pictures. And some seem to have that little skinny heel, almost like a regular human foot, but not as big. And some are more like dog tracks. But that phenomenon, we haven't really been able to capture any sort of picture or video evidence.
All right.
That's too compelling. So it's hard to... But once again, people are seeing something, and hopefully we can get something... I know Linda Godfrey's working hard in Wisconsin. She took a new report recently, and she's investigating that. She has trail cams set up for that. She's doing her diligence.
Yeah,
and
she's
got a new
pretty
book.
Cool lady.
Yeah, she's got a new book coming out. I think it's next month, Monsters in America.
We'll have to
get her back on the show. I had her on almost a year ago.
Yeah. I remember.
She's a busy lady.
Nice lady. Yeah. She is. She takes her research and investigation seriously, and
yeah, she's the queen of the dogman world.
Well, that must be fun.
Yeah, and it happens to be kind of in her hometown, too, so she's based in the headquarters. You know, she used to be a reporter back in the day, and I think that's
what
got her all into it.
Right, that's how she got her start, wasn't it? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she got the bug, and now she's hooked.
Yeah, it happens like that.
And see, Finding Bigfoot season finale is tonight.
Now, is this a season finale or is this the series finale? Because that's also something I'm confused by.
I think it's the season.
Yeah, I read that it was the season, but I've also heard before this last onslaught of however many episodes are in a season now, because television series now, they don't run the same way they used to. You would have a fall lineup, and your television program would run from September through maybe January, February, and now seasons are, you know, 2-3 per year. It's crazy. And that's not with Finding Bigfoot. That's with everything I see. And, Finding Bigfoot, before this last onslaught of episodes, I had seen that it was ending. Is that not the case, I guess?
Well, I heard they're filming more. I've heard that there's actually one more season.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but... And then tonight, they're traveling to the Four Corners location to do something they've never done before.
Oh,
squatch
my gosh.
In four states in one episode.
Wow. That's amazing. Are they
squatching in all four
states at once? No.
I don't know. That would be kind of cool, yeah. The commercial looks like each of them kind of walks in a different direction at the four corners.
Well, they need to continue trying things that they've never tried before because it's not going so well.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was done too, but apparently they're filming another season. Let's see. Did you see the new Two Bigfoot Caught on Tape in Mississippi video?
No. Was that today?
Yep.
Nope. I was at a family gathering today. See, when Bigfoot's discovered, I'm going to miss it. I know it. What were the two Bigfoot doing?
I think there was a juvenile kind of swinging in a tree, and the other one was hanging in the background. It's definitely a blob squatch. Yeah, I put it on the Bigfoot Research News blog. See, the person reported the video. They sent it to the crypto crew, and they said, I think they thought they saw a Bigfoot in it. And then the crypto crew broke it down and found two Bigfoots.
Oh.
And, you know, when I look at it, I kind of see what they're talking about, but at the same time, I see so many other black shadows and spots in the woods that are kind of moving in the breeze. It's like you could see 10 Bigfoot.
Oh, okay. Now, was it a recent report or video, or was it just recently reported? Oh, it was. So it wasn't a video someone found from 1986?
No, but it looks like it was filmed in 86.
Oh, okay. So there's a chance that it was an old video.
No, it's just because it's such a blurry, you know, it's your typical Bigfoot video.
It's Bigfoot. Jeez. Oh.
So it's like the oldest cell phone, and it doesn't get in focus. But I think it could very well be a case of paranoia.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, and you know what? I can't sit here and complain too much because I have a hard time zooming in and focusing on something that is 5 feet from me standing completely still. Live, known animals, deer, birds, they're right there and my phone just won't cooperate.
Yeah, that's true. I remember going in the woods and I heard some movement and got the camera out and all of a sudden this big thing just rushes through the bushes and right as it happens, I slip into this bog and I got like one leg a foot down in the mud. The camera's just going bonkers. And it ends up being a deer that I couldn't even get on video for more than like half a second.
Yeah, so I mean that falls in favor of Bigfoot photographs and video, but then there's also the idea that something like that, even so, a good video or photo sometimes is enough to cause a stir and an uproar, and you know the end result always seems to be the same thing anyway. Regardless, everything usually turns up inconclusive, and you know there's not too much that can be done with it.
Yeah, there could be two Bigfoot in that Mississippi video. It's just too inconclusive, and you start looking at other factors.
By now, so what if there was?
Yeah, like you really need to find some corroborating evidence. You know, I want to hear some more stuff to go with it. You gotta sweeten the pie a little bit to get it through me and make me think that it could be legit.
Yeah, it's very much a situation of just it's Bigfoot. And a lot of people seem to be quick to jump on board with that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. Yes, that is Bigfoot. I agree. And, you know, now there's definitely people who take it the few steps further and try to, you know, rule out other things and prove that it is Bigfoot, but so far that hasn't happened either, so. But at least they're trying.
Yeah, exactly. So all we can do is try.
Right.
Okay. Well, I guess why don't we introduce our guest for the evening? Our guest for the evening is a longtime Bigfoot and paranormal investigator out of the state of Texas. He runs the website Night Watchers. He's also the case director for Pintex, which is the Paranormal Investigations of North Texas. Welcome, Robert Dominguez,
hey,
to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Hey, Crystal.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to go say a couple things before we get started. I wanted to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to talk about passionate subjects as paranormal and Bigfoot. I really, really appreciate it. And so, thank you.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And then two, I wanted to mention because. This happened last year. Bobby Short passed away last year, May 16th, 2013, last year. And I don't see a lot of people talking about her. And she was a big influence on me when I first got into Bigfoot in 99. And she has an incredible website, BigfootEncounters.com. And when I first got in, she actually was with us on the Texas Bigfoot Research Center whenever I first formed in 99. And she had a great website, great lady. I wish I had more chance to talk to her, but you know, she was collecting data and doing like sighting reports and doing newsletters way before a lot of people were actually doing it. And so she passed away last year, and she was a really good friend of mine. And I just don't see a lot of Bigfoot people talking about her. So I just wanted to mention that she will be, you know, greatly missed. So I just wanted to say that.
Nice. Is her website still going then? By a
it
family
is,
member or something?
Yeah, I think her grandson, Chris Millett, I believe it's Millett, is doing it. I think I emailed him last year. I haven't heard back from him, but last night, I don't think he's doing regular updates, but it's still going.
That's awesome.
So.
Yeah, that's one of the first sites I hit in Google, too, when I started really getting into it.
Yep, that was a highly suggested, well-documented, well-thought-out, and just a ton of info.
Yes, I mean, I think when I first got in, I was on that website constantly because our website was just up, TexasBigfoot.com, and that was a while back. And we didn't really have a lot of sightings on it, but I would go to that one just to look at stuff and see sighting reports and, you know, just stuff like that. It was really, really, I mean, I spent hours on it, and I was at work, you know, like, you know, probably a lot of us do. We're at work, and we're looking at Bigfoot stuff, and I go, I better close this website down before I get caught. but yeah, great, great lady. I wish I had spent more time talking to her. I talked to her a couple of times because she was actually with Texas Bigfoot Research Center whenever we first got started, and she was with us for a couple months, and then she ended up leaving, and I got a chance to talk to her on a couple conference calls, and I talked to her after I ended up leaving TBRC, and I talked to her a couple times about some Bigfoot sightings, and we talked for a little bit. I just wish I had more time talking to her, and I kind of wish I could go back in time and do it. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about her really, really quick because she was important to me.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, Bobby.
Yes.
So do you want to start off maybe and tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in this whole phenomenon as cryptozoology and paranormal?
Yes, absolutely. When I was a kid, my father took me to go see a drive-in movie, The Legend of Bargate Creek. Maybe you guys heard of it. But he took me to go see this when I was little, and I was hooked. As soon as I saw that, I would go to school and I would draw pictures and I would tell, you know, all my classmates, hey, we got to form a Bigfoot group and go looking for like Bigfoot in at California. See, I thought it was only in California then, or the Pacific Northwest. And so I would do book reports about it. I remember checking out books by John Green and stuff. I couldn't decipher a lot of the words in it when I was little, so I would go to my dad and ask him stuff like that. So I kind of got in there that way. And then, like, in late 98, I was at work. I typed in the word Texas Bigfoot, and it popped. It was weird because it popped up. I don't know if you guys know Don Keeney.
Yeah.
He was running the Ohio Bigfoot Conference up in New Cumberstown, and it popped up his website, and it had a guy, a name on there by the name of Luke Gross, and he's wearing a cowboy hat, had his picture at this conference. I think it was the 12th annual Bigfoot conference, and had his email address on it. So I emailed him. I said, "Hey, how does one contribute in Bigfoot in Texas?" And I think he emailed me back like a couple days later, and then he called me and said that he was in. I think I'm probably going to get it wrong. He's probably like in Mississippi or Missouri doing a Bigfoot sighting report, and said he would call me a couple of days later. So a couple of days later go by, he calls me. We talk on the phone for like 4 hours about Bigfoot, and I was trying to soak as much as info that he was dishing out to me, and he kind of told me, "Bob, I'm forming a group, and I would like you to be a part of it." So we're going to be meeting at this guy's house in Dallas. So I said, sure. So I drove up to this guy's house that I didn't even know. And so I drove up there, I met up with Lou Gross, Craig Wheeler, Gino Napoli, Buddy Britt, Jerry Heston, Rand Trusty, Ricky Moon, Cindy Goodbreak. I'm probably leaving somebody out. I can't think. But we all met, we all collectively met, we all had ideas about Bigfoot, so we ended up forming Texas Bigfoot Research Center late 98, early 99. And so I was with the group until I think I left before 2001. I left the group and I went independent, and I started doing stuff on my own. And you know, I was kind of, it was like just 2 years, and I was kind of burned out of doing group stuff, and group stuff's okay. It's not for everybody. So I end up leaving, and I started doing stuff on my own, and some other colleagues end up leaving TBRC, and we kind of end up getting together and start doing some pretty cool independent stuff. And we were doing some stuff that the group was kind of not wanting us to do or go out, you know, think outside of the box. And so we did a couple things in Parrish, Texas, and did some video stuff, And then I kind of stopped for a while. And then I kind of stopped for a while because I got burned out, I guess, from this. I like to stay positive about Bigfoot stuff, but at the time it was so much negative stuff in the field, and I was defending a lot of people. And so I kind of got out of it for a little bit, and then I ended up getting contacted by Kendall Wilkerson. She's running Penn, Texas. Great lady, by the way. Great, great lady. I cannot say enough good things about this lady. And she ended up forming Paranormal Investigations of North Texas. And I kind of missed helping people. So at first, when I got into Bigfoot stuff, I kind of got into it because I wanted to do it. I was interested in the subject, very passionate. But after a while, I was really enjoying helping people. And so when I wasn't doing it anymore and I wasn't constantly getting sighting reports and stuff like that, She kind of recruited me into the paranormal side, and I'm passionate about paranormal too. I don't know a lot of it, and so I kind of got with her and kind of end up being the case director, and you know, I just kind of just wanted to help people that have nowhere to go. So I was just kind of passionate about that.
Which is part of your mission statement, isn't it, for the website?
Yes, it is. It is. It's one of the things that I'm really into big time. And like I was saying earlier, I mean, I did a lot of Bigfoot stuff, and you know, I know the TBRC was kind of into documenting stuff, and that was their, you know, that was their like big thing. And to me, I always thought about helping people first, document second. That's just the way I look at it. And maybe it's wrong, or maybe people don't agree with it. I don't really care, but I kind of was into it just to help people. And I had a lot of cases where people would call me like, or contact me like at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they saw a Bigfoot outside their window, or you know, something knocking on their trailer, something. And so I would call them back. I said, okay, I can be out there like in 2 days or the weekend or something, and I can go out and check it out, and we can assess something, and you can probably go from there. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So you know, Penn, Texas is kind of filling the void for me to help people, and if they have paranormal issues and they don't know where to go, and so.
Nice.
So are
your
paranormal
lines? You got the Bigfoot
lines...
burnout.
Yeah, big time Bigfoot burnout. I mean, I was in it since '99, and kind of there was a lot of stuff going on at the time, and I won't go into it too much. And it's just you know, some of my friends were getting bashed by other Bigfoot people, and I was spending more time defending them than actual doing research, field research, which I was kind of passionate about. And so I needed a break. So I took a break for a little bit, and luckily, you know, Kendall found me, and you know, she, you know, because she, it's funny because she calls me Bigfoot Bob.
Yeah.
So whenever she needed someone to sit in the attic or sit in the basement, and you know, if she says, hey, I need someone to sit in the attic or something, I raise my hand. I go, I'll do it. She's like, you know, you sure, Bob? I said, Kendall, I've been in gullies and top of trees and you know, areas all by myself and Bigfoot. This is nothing. I got a roof over my head. I'm good. So. So,
what were you going to say, Crystal?
I was going to ask if by paranormal that was involved with Bigfoot, or if that was separate on its own, like you investigate paranormal issues as well as Bigfoot.
I do. I haven't done a lot of Bigfoot stuff since 2009. I haven't done any field research since 2009.
Oh, okay.
Up in Oklahoma. And I never equate the two. I never put them together, paranormal and Bigfoot. If something happens in the field, you know, I kind of do it a separate time, and I note it down, and I come back, and I'll probably do it. I rarely had an incident in which I had a paranormal and Bigfoot thing at the same time. So I keep them separate, and I don't equate the two at all.
Oh, okay. That's kind of how I had it figured. I wasn't sure, because you never know, you know.
Yeah, there's lots of people that kind of put them together, and it's not a knock on anybody at all.
No.
I mean, one of the persons that come to mind is what's his name, Rob Riggs. He's got the book The Big Thicket. And he equate a lot of that stuff to orbs and Bigfoot and stuff like that. And that's, you know, it's great. And, you know, I'm sure everybody has different experiences in the woods, and, you know, not everybody sees the same thing, you know. So
I
have a saying all the time. We used to have a saying in TBRC, just because you like Bigfoot doesn't mean I got to be in the woods with you. So, because I was listening to the show last week, and they were saying about, you know, some people think that we're freaks and stuff, and because we like Bigfoot and we like Dogman and paranormal stuff and all this stuff, and then you run into a lot of strange people in the field, you know, and so
Yeah, you do. And that was probably more me, and I did. I didn't think that would go over so well, but I didn't mean it that way. And to be quite honest with you, most times when Bigfoot is brought up in, we'll call it the general population, I'm not looked at as abnormally as you would think. So, you know, and that's not to say I don't bring it up as in, hey, what do you think about Bigfoot? Do you like it? It's cool, right? But just if it happens to come up or be brought up among people who aren't familiar with it or don't follow the subject closely, they seem more interested than get away from me weirdo. So that's cool, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've talked to so many people, and, you know, I can't say a lot of names because a lot of the times I did interviews with was under TBRC, so they have, you know, copyrighted stuff, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, divulge people's names and stuff, but I've talked to a lot of people in the state of Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, and I've talked to so many people regarding sightings, and, like, we used to, some guys in the group used to just like, okay, let's go talk to this person and let's hear what they got to say. And if they didn't like the story, they would say, ah, heck with it. It's not a Bigfoot case. And I would do the opposite. I would talk to them no matter what. Because I talked to one guy that he swore up and down that he saw a Bigfoot cross the road, walk through a portal hole, and he said he saw inside the portal hole that he saw a different vegetation from the background, from the regular background that he was driving down the road. And he swore up and down that that's what he saw. And I asked him the question about, hey, are you on meds? Hey, has anybody in your family ever been committed? Just stuff like that. And, you know, I'd always do the sighting report anyway, because I would use it as a tool just to use, you know, down the road. Okay, this person saw this at this time, and I would document it. And so that's just the way I was. And you know, some of the guys in the group say, I'm not doing it. But.
Yeah, and that's I can see on both sides where it would be hard to, you know, pinpoint which cases you run with and which cases you don't, because it seems like there's a lot of reports coming in to just about everyone who puts themselves in a position to receive the reports. They're getting calls. They're being contacted. Right. And, you know, that kind of makes you think about things a little bit differently, too, that they are being reached out to. And from there, I can imagine that it'd be difficult to, you know, who do you run with and who do you not. So I guess documenting everything and taking everything into consideration, like you said, even if you put it away for later.
I mean, because, like, yeah, you're right. Because, like, there was just people that had really – because whenever someone, a sighting report would come in to me, I would pull up a satellite map or a topo map or whatever, and I'd pull it up and look at the county, and I would look at, you know, what waterways were in the area, what if there was, like, a tree line, if there was, you know, a national forest, you know, state park, something. And I would look at that, and I said, there's no way this guy saw Bigfoot without, you know, other people seeing it. And so I would still go over there, and I would still do the sighting report, talk to the guy, do the interview. I would do a phone interview, and then I would try to drive out there and talk to the person. And, you know, I would just do it anyway because, you know, you have to sharpen your skills constantly. And that's the way I looked at it. And you know, like on the paranormal side, we get that sometimes. And I get some cases where someone will call me and says, okay, I have a haunting going on in my house, and I also have a witch, you know, trying to kill me, stuff like that. And I go, okay. And so, you know, a lot of these people, they don't have anywhere to go. They don't. I mean, I've done some Bigfoot sighting reports where the lady would call me and she said, I can't talk to the sheriff, I can't talk to the constable, I can't talk to the game warden. You're my last hope.
Right.
And so I would just okay. I would cater to them, and I would say, okay, just whenever you feel like talking to me, call me anyway, you know. And on the paranormal side, there's a guy right now that I'm dealing with right now up in Oklahoma, and he's the one I was talking about the haunting and the witches and stuff. And I always told him, I said, I'm not going to be able to do your case, but if you need to talk, call me. I'm here for you to listen, and if you need to talk some stuff out, I'm here for you also. So, I mean, I at least try to provide that for people. I haven't helped anybody Bigfoot wise in a while, but if someone were to call me, I would help them. I would help them and at least hear them out and try to go out there and see what they have. So.
Nice. So you were saying that you didn't really think Bigfoot was in Texas when you were growing up. You thought it was more of a Pacific Northwest thing?
Yes. Yeah. It was funny that, you know, because whenever you say that, whenever I was talking to Luke Gross, I don't know if you guys know Luke Gross at all. Do you?
I've heard the name.
I do not.
He, in my mind, he is the grandfather of Texas Bigfoot, to be honest with you, because I think he was with the Gulf Coast group before forming TBRC in 99, and he had left the group then, and in 99 there was not a lot of, you know, internet traffic on the internet regarding Texas Bigfoot stuff. And so he started the group in 99, and whenever I talked to him, the first thing he told me was, hey, I'm going to take you to the field. And I have never been in the field prior to 99. And he says, I'm going to take you to the field, Bob, and you're either going to love it or it's going to be hooks in you and you're never going to be able to let it go. And so he took me out to an area in Texas. I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it's Sulphur Springs. I think it's Delta County. Delta County, Texas. I'm probably wrong. Luke, I'm sorry. And he took me out, and Luke had always thought that a lot of the Texas Bigfoot were moving through electrical right-of-ways and gas right-of-ways. And there was like a clear cut through a county. And so he had always believed that. And so we were on this lady's property. And this lady had agreed to have us on her property, and her property sat right in the middle of this electrical right-of-way. And we were sitting there, I think it was like 9 o'clock at night, and he was telling me, he goes, Bob, they're going to be coming around about this certain time, and you're going to know it. I go, okay. So we're sitting here talking about Bigfoot, and it was probably about, I don't know, like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, and this lady had dogs, and the dogs were around us, you know, sniffing us and jumping on us and stuff. But around 12 or 1 o'clock, the dogs were gone. They were under the house. And so I'm sitting there with him, and all of a sudden we hear this big old loud pow, like a shotgun blast. And I go, somebody's shooting. And then we hear another one, pow. Then another one, pow. And I go, someone's shooting? And Luke turns to me and says, no, that's tree breaks. He's letting us know that he's here, and he's the alpha. And I go, really? He goes, yes. And so, you know, later on, that, you know, after about 1 o'clock, I guess he passed through or something like that. So Luke turns to me and says, he's going to be back around between, you know, 4 and 6. I go, okay. So we're sitting there still talking about Bigfoot and stuff. And then probably about 100 yards behind us, I heard the loudest yell I have ever heard. And it was like high pitch, constantly, you know, growing. It was like so loud, my chest was vibrating. And so he was just yelling at us, letting us know that he's going by again. And so the next morning we got up, you know, I think we ended up going to sleep after that, and I think we got up the next morning, and he took me down to this tree line, and we saw this tree line full of Bodar trees, and Bodar trees are very, very, the woods are very, very hard. And about 8 feet up, you could see about 3 or 4 inch diameter branches twisted clockwise. Down this tree line. And I didn't, you know, I didn't see what did this. I heard it, and I looked at it. I said, man, there wasn't, like, any, like, truck marks going through the area, you know, and there was nothing. So, I mean, whatever twisted, I had to have an opposable thumb to do it. You know, it's pretty thick branch for it to twist. And so I was hooked. Once he told me that, I was hooked on Bigfoot stuff, and I haven't looked back since then, so.
Is that in eastern Texas, then?
Yeah, it was. It's right before you get to the Piney Woods. It's right between Jefferson and Tyler. So it's Sulphur Springs, Texas.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was growing up, same thing. Bigfoot was a faraway thing in the Pacific Northwest, or the Yeti, you know, the abominable snowman, those kind of things. But I was always fascinated by it, but it wasn't until I saw a show about Bigfoot in Texas that I really got hooked. I was watching it with a friend of mine, and he said, Bigfoot in Texas, you know, and he just, like, laughed in disbelief.
Uh-huh.
He was like, well, what next, you know? But then when they showed a map of the Bigfoot sightings and how it correlated to the heavy rainfall charts in the state,
uh-huh.
Now that's kind of the hook that really got me going. I thought that was very compelling.
Did you start looking up stuff in your own state?
Oh, yeah. You know, and then I started watching every show I possibly could. And then I jumped on the internet, you know, joined a couple of Facebook groups, and it just spread from there. But I thought that was interesting, and I think they're on the eastern side for the most part, if I remember right.
Yeah, yeah, they're mostly in the area what we call the Piney Woods, and it goes down like as high as the Oklahoma border. It goes all the way down to. Probably going to get this wrong. It goes down to, I think, the Davy Crockett National Forest and Sam Houston, the Angelina, and it's an area is called the Big Thicket. And I used to do one of the guys that I was with on TBRC. He's from Washington State. Rand Trusty. He's a great friend of mine, and he's up in the Redwoods and stuff. And he's done a lot of research up in the Redwoods and stuff. And when he came down to Texas and he saw the Piney Woods, he says, man, Bob, that's the thickest stuff I've ever seen. And it is pretty thick. And you could easily see how stuff can not be seen for years down there. So it's pretty thick.
It seems like they're pretty well organized, the groups down there, and they've been around for a while. They're established. It's just from the gist what I get, and they
yeah
seems
yeah,
to be a big deal.
There's lots of groups down here now, and I know when I was with the TBRC, we were the first ones to do the Texas Bigfoot Conference, and we first did them in Jefferson. And I know since I left the TBRC, they've changed names. I forgot what they're called. North American Western.
Wood Ape Conservancy.
Yeah.
That's funny because that was actually one of the first. There's an app for the TBRC, and that was actually one of the first things I found.
Really?
Because there's an app for that. Now I do believe that the app still exists, and I don't believe the name has changed on that. But there were. Reports and stories within that app. Not many, but the ones that were there I found to be very compelling whenever, you know, I had first gotten involved, which has only been, you know, not very long at all, less than 2 years. But
right.
There were some stories on there that I found compelling and that I thought were pretty cool. So.
Well, I don't like to toot my own horn. I never do that. If anybody knows who I am, I don't do that. But I did a lot of sighting reports for them, and I know when I left, they took my name off a lot of them. So, which is okay. I don't really care. You know, I did a lot of time there, and I enjoyed my time there. I thought at the time, whenever we first formed the group, that we were a really good group. We were really good, and we were customer oriented, and we documented a lot of stuff, and we were trying different strange things, and we were going out of the box and stuff. And then there was a period of time that I didn't like our direction where we were going, and I decided to leave. So I left. And but I think Jerry Heston, which is a good friend of mine, he's still on that group. He's still with the Conservancy group now, and he's the only member from the original group that's still there. And he's a good guy. Love him to death. Great, great person. I can't say enough good things about him. And just getting back to Luke Rose, he's a big influence in my life, and I wouldn't be here on the show right now if it wasn't for him, or if he didn't reach out to me and talk to me. And that guy knows a lot of stuff about Texas. He knows a lot about, we would be out in the woods and he would point out a tree or a vegetation, and he would tell me like the Latin name of it and tell me, hey, and we would be walking in the woods and he would find persimmons and, Mexican plums and say, hey, this is edible and stuff like that. So anytime I was in the woods with him, I was trying to, soak up as much as info as I could. And he's just a great, great guy. And I can't say enough good things about him either. So he's always going to be a mentor of mine, and I will always look up to him. And when I first got into Bigfoot stuff, I was like, when I was in the woods and stuff, I was scared because I didn't go to the woods. I'm not a hunter. I didn't do a lot of stuff like that. So when I was in the woods, I was pretty scared. But when I was with him, I was always confident. So he has a big, big influence in my life, and I will always be grateful to him.
Nice. Yeah, it looks like they changed the name to the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. I can't even say it.
Yeah.
Conservancy, yeah.
No whack. That's what I call them. No whack.
Okay.
But,
article.
It's not a knock on them. I don't know the guys that are running the group now. I'm sure they're all great people. And they're great guys. If they got Jerry in the group, then they have to be good. So
who is all part of it now?
You would ask me that. As soon as I left TBRC, I didn't look back, and I just didn't. I mean, I wish them all the luck in the world, whatever they're like doing and stuff. And I don't have any bad things about them. I mean, I know they expand outside of Texas now, but. I don't know. To be honest with you, to answer your question, I really don't know. I just know Jerry Heston is still in that group, and he still lives in Texas, and I still talk to him from time to time, and he's a good person. So
seems like they changed the name because they wanted to get away from the stigma of Bigfoot. Is that what it is? Because it's kind of become a joke in our culture.
Trying to get more
legitimacy or something.
I think so. I think they're kind of like. They're kind of like the BFRO a little bit. They got a lot of PhDs in there now. I could be wrong, but I think they got a lot of PhDs. And at the time, whenever we formed, we didn't have any PhDs at all. And in 99, it's funny that you said, because in 99, I contacted the BFRO, and there's nothing against them. They're a great group. And I contacted them, and I wanted to be a part of them, and they never would call me back or email me back. And that's when Luke, called me back and stuff, so...
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. The name changed to me. I mean, I kind of like sticking with Bigfoot because people just know what Bigfoot is. I know there might be a joke kind of associated with it, but it is what it is. The word ape kind of, just strikes me as, it's almost like you have a new battle to fight now, getting that out there. And
yeah.
I guess they want to make it sound, they must think it's an animal and not a human type.
Yeah, well, hopefully one of the guys will call in and tell us.
Because it's like,
Jerry, call in.
What if they're human?
Jerry.
What if they're human? Then do you change the name again?
Yeah. Jerry, call in and tell us.
That's funny. Yeah, everything's bigger in Texas, right?
So I hear. I mean, I've done stuff in Oklahoma and Arkansas and Louisiana, but mostly in Oklahoma and Texas. So I've traveled a little bit. I've been to the 13th annual Ohio Bigfoot Conference, where I met Don Keating and Mark DeWorth and Eric Altman and Mike Frizzell and a lot of people. I mean, I got to meet a lot of people, and I traveled a lot. So when I first got into it, so. But Texas is, Texas is good. There's a lot of stuff going on, and there's some parts of Texas that you can go in, and it's pretty scary, getting back out at night. So which I'm sure any place is like that too. But you know, Texas has got a little bit of everything. They got desert, they got plains, they got trees, they got ocean. So
yeah, I just pictured Texas as more deserty, but after watching that Bigfoot show, I realized the Big Thicket is no joke.
No, it's not at all.
That goes into Oklahoma too, doesn't it? So it's like that whole eastern side of both those states is supposed to be pretty squatchy.
Yeah, it is, because most of the stuff that I was doing when I left the group, I was doing a lot of stuff in Paris, and I did some stuff in Moyers, Oklahoma. And it's right on the cusp of the Big Thicket, and then you have the Kimichi National Forest, the Kimichi Mountains. And so it's kind of right into it, and that runs straight into the Ozarks. So, I mean, there's a lot of area that's not being touched or seen or anything like that. So.
Yeah, that rainfall chart was interesting, though. So it made sense to me because it brought the correlation of the Pacific Northwest having Bigfoot and how wet it is there. You know, then the wet part of Texas supposedly has Bigfoot. You know, it helped it make sense. It bridged that gap.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that as well too. Because like when I got into Bigfoot stuff, and we would always go out to the same areas constantly, and sometimes I had some friends that lived in certain towns, and they would tell me, hey, the game wardens or the park rangers know that you're in town. And so after a while, I quit saying that I was looking for Bigfoot. I tell them I was a student and I was doing soil samples for deer migration and stuff like that. And so I would say stuff like that because like they would actually come to us and harass us sometimes and like try to get us out of the area or ask us, what are you doing here and stuff. And it was weird. It was weird to get that. And I've seen a lot of stuff. I've been shot at twice. And that's no fun. And not by the game wardens, of course. But, you know, I've been shot at by some landowners that they didn't know I was on their property, and I got shot at, and I ducked. And so now whenever I would go out, I would call people and say, hey, I'm Spanish. I'm wearing a blue shirt. I got to steal your car. Don't shoot me. So I would do that from time to time, and it's funny. You know, it wasn't funny then, but it's funny now.
Do you think the game wardens know, or do you think they just think it's a joke and they don't want you wasting your time there?
You know, I'll tell the story a little after I say this, but I went up to Concho, Oklahoma, and I went up to go to talk to somebody about Bigfoot, and I end up talking to an Indian Bureau of Affairs officer. And I walked up to him, and I had a tape recorder at the time. I didn't have digital. We didn't have digital back then. And I walked up to him, and I said, hey, can you tell me anything about Bigfoot? And he would tell me, turn that off, and I'll talk to you. And I go, okay. So I pull out the batteries, pull out the tape. I go, look, and I put it on the hood. And he would tell me. He says, man, they're here all the time. We get, like, 5 calls a week about it. And I thought it was kind of odd. So
wow.
I never got a chance to talk to a park ranger or a game warden about it, and they would like always like whenever you start asking questions, they would just leave. So, but I did a deal with Todd Partain. Todd Partain's got a he's not in Bigfoot anymore, but he was doing documentary stuff, and he called me up one day and he wanted to go up to Oklahoma, Concho, Oklahoma, it's north of Oklahoma City, and he said that he had heard on the internet that there was a casino that had a sighting of a Bigfoot behind the casino who was drinking out of the grease pits. And I said, let's go. So we went up there, and we drove up there, and I ended up meeting this guy by the name of Michael Sulfur. He said his cousin, I can't remember, his cousin or somebody in his family, his uncle or somebody, was working at this casino called the Lucky Seven, and they had video of this Bigfoot walking behind this casino and drinking out of the grease pit. And so we went up there, and I said, okay, let's just go up there and let's try to talk to anybody we can, just try to get our hands on that video or at least look at it. So we went up there, and I think it's Caddo National Tribe.
No, grease pit, as in where they dumped the grease from, like the restaurant.
Yeah, they had a big metal container where they would open up and then dump all the grease in, or they would have a grease trap. They would have a grease trap like in the kitchen that would go. That would like go from the floor to there, and it would fill up in there. And then I guess they would have a company come out and pump out the grease. And so supposedly there was a video of this Bigfoot walking up and licking out of this grease pit. And so whenever we went up there, we walked up to the casino and we tried to talk to the management. They wouldn't want to talk to us. They didn't want to talk to us. And he was trying to get his cousin or his relative to come out and talk to us. They clammed up. They didn't want to talk to us. And I was pleading with them. I said, please, just let me look at the video. I just want to see it. We won't take it. We won't make copies of it. Just let me see it. And they would not let me do it. And so, and so we wanted to go like into town to go talk to other people. So I said, we're here. Let's just go talk to people. And you know, this is Native American land. So you can't just walk on the property. We had to go to the tribe's council and talk to them, get documentation. And then we had to have, like, a liaison with us to walk around property because they would arrest you on spot. If you're a non-Native American, you would get arrested, like, right away. And so the guy I was with was a redhead guy, so we would probably get arrested, like, right away. You know, I'm kind of dark-skinned. I could probably got away with it, you know. I could say I was Bob Dancing Bear or something, and I was okay, you know. And so we end up going into town and talking to people, and no one would talk to us. And they would say, hey, go talk to this lady down the street. She calls, like, you know, three or four times about Bigfoot. So we knocking on her door. She slammed the door in our face. So I said, So we try to talk to everybody. No one would talk to us. So we end up going into the woods, which was right, you know, near that small town. And we were sitting in the woods, and I was with the liaison and then Todd Partain, and I got out of our vehicle and started I did a couple of tree knocks, and you know, didn't get anything. And then the Native American Bureau of Affairs officer rolled up, and that's when I asked him the question about you know, what do you want to tell me about Bigfoot? And he wouldn't do it until I turned off the tape recorder, so I ended up doing it. And he talked to us, I think, for like a couple of hours, like, regarding Bigfoot. And it was, he said that they would do powwows, and the Bigfoot would come up and watch them and stuff. And he said everybody like in the town sees it, just no one's going to say anything because they don't want, you know, any researchers out here on their property. So I thought it was kind of weird, and you know, he ended up leaving, and so it was getting pretty dark, and sun was going down, and the liaison was telling us, but hey, we should probably leave. I said, well, let's just wait a while. And so I get out and I do a couple more tree knocks, nothing. And then I do a yell, and then probably, you know, like in the distance, we get a yell back. And I go, yes, I was really excited. And the liaison goes, we should probably leave now, Robert. So, you know, we end up leaving because I didn't look at our documentation to see how long we could stay. So we end up leaving, so. But that was one of the stories that I've done up in Concho, and that was a pretty interesting story.
Bigfoot research sounds fun.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and the Native Americans, many of them have a different view of Bigfoot than we do, I think, too. Like, if we got a Bigfoot on tape, we want to show everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they might maybe want to protect it or just not want the attention.
Yeah, that's what I got. That's what I gathered when I was talking to that officer, and he was kind of telling me that they were seen around sage bushes or something. And I don't know if that makes sense. And I said, oh, okay, really? Right on. So I would write it down. And but he was saying a lot of them were near sage, and I don't. I thought that was kind of strange, but.
Oh, that's cool. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, so we're going to take a short break, and then we'll take some callers. So we'll see you in about 5 minutes.
Roger that.
right, we're back.
All right.
And it looks like we got a caller, a couple callers. We'll take one of them now. 207, you're on MXR.
Bob Dominguez doesn't think about the Chupacabra. He's not Hispanic. He's white, and they took him in Spain.
Christopher York. What's up, brother?
Not much. I just wanted to jump on and say hey and give you some crap.
Man, I was going to do a shout-out to you later on, too, man.
Yeah. We did a show tonight. I haven't uploaded it yet. But, yeah, I just wanted to call on and give the Chupacabra a shout-out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
He's the best Chupacabra hunter in the world that doesn't hunt the Chupacabra.
Nice.
Have fun, folks. That's all I got.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Wow. That guy's funny.
Nice.
I forgot to mention that. He calls me that, the Chupacabra hunter.
So does Steve Alcorn, I noticed. He made a comment.
Yeah,
as well.
I'll tell a story about it later on about it, but it's a funny story.
Yeah, those two do a show together, right?
Yeah, they do the Freudian slip. It's Chris York, Steve Alcorn, and Matt, which is my close friend. And hey, Matt, they do a good show. I think I was on the 9th or the 8th show. I did I stood in for Steve, and it's a good show. I listen to it regularly, so.
Nice. Yeah, and Matt's also doing a show with Para Breakdown.
Phil Poling, yeah.
A webcast every now and then. That's really good too.
Yeah, I like Phil's stuff. He does Bigfoot. He does paranormal stuff, and I was gonna do a shout out to Phil, but I guess I'm doing it now. Phil, what's up?
All right. Well, we got another caller. We'll take 508. You're on MXR.
Hey, good evening, guys. How are you?
Hey.
I'm a Sasquatch researcher. I'm from New England. I've been about a Sasquatch researcher for about 10 years now. And I like to ask people from other parts of the country. I've found in a lot of cases with my Sasquatch research and the different reports that I've looked into, are other people in other parts of the country noticing the relationship to Sasquatch sighting reports and power lines, utility corridors, railroad beds, that sort of thing? And I was wondering if the guest has noticed that with his research and investigations.
That's a good question. I was telling the story earlier that whenever I first got into Bigfoot stuff with and I was being introduced by Luke Gross regarding Bigfoot research. He had believed that a lot of the Squatches were moving through Texas through gas right-of-ways and electrical right-of-ways. And so anytime we did, like, any kind of Bigfoot stuff, we would go, we would find that and just walk it, and we would always find, like, tree breaks, footprints, and all kinds of stuff, scat, all kinds of stuff. And so it was always a good... It was always like a good starter, like a starter kit to do it, just to walk into an area and say, okay, where's the gas right-of-way? Where's the electrical right-of-way? Let's look it up on the satellite photo or the topo map. And we would always look for it. And a lot of times we would get sighting reports that either cascaded it or was right next to it constantly. So, but, yeah, that's a really good question. And we used to get into Texas. So, yes, to answer your question, yes.
So okay, in other parts of the country, too, because like I said, the dozen, 15 or so reports I've looked into here in New England, they all seem to be within fairly close distance to a utility corridor or a railroad bed. And I was just wondering if that was a commonality across the country and other reports. So it is.
I mean, whenever you go into an area, have you walked it? Have you just walked up to one and just started walking it, looking at it, and try to see, like, have you seen any tree breaks or anything like that? Or
well, a lot of the reports I've gotten, there's three or four probably from the same area where I live in New England. I live in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And there was two sighting reports right on a railroad bed in one town. There was another sighting report on a utility corridor that actually connects to that railroad bed where the other two sighting reports. But it's just going over the different sighting reports and going out to these areas, I just seemed to notice that when I would get there and do the investigations that, geez, I can see a railroad bed or there's a utility corridor. They were either on their railroad beds or on the utility corridors or right nearby. So that's kind of one of the things when I go out to a certain area where, you know, I might get a sighting report and, hey, it's in this certain area. And if one of the first things I've started to look for is it near a utility bed or a railroad, utility corridor or a railroad bed? And it just seems like I'd say probably almost every sighting report I've gotten from that from New England, Massachusetts specifically, has been near these areas. That's why I like to ask people from other parts of the country, have they noticed kind of the same thing?
That's a great question. Great question. And thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Do you think that's in part, too, because those areas are open? You know, it's there could be three more Bigfoot, you know, in the woods right next to that.
Right.
You know, do you think that's a factor, or do you think they're using them for travel?
Go ahead.
In my mind, it's just looking at a lot of these, the railroad beds, utility corridors, most of the time they're out kind of in, like, the far away, far out sort of places, not in the areas where there's a lot of people around. And I know specifically when I noticed with the railroad beds, is that looking into, you know, history of the railroads, and a lot of times they would try to get into an area, a busy area when it used to be used for shipping freight and people used for transportation, that a lot of times they would get into an area where it was populated and out of an area kind of almost as quickly as possible. They tried to keep them out of the really populated areas. And just looking around in a lot of the investigations that I've done, that you could basically jump on a railroad bed or utility corridor and generally use those as a route of travel without being seen, and you could go from one state to the other. I live in Massachusetts. I could jump on the railroad beds. They don't use them anymore. The railroad tracks have been, you know, removed. But I could jump on railroad tracks right in town here where I live in Massachusetts, and with a couple of turns, walk all the way up into the Adirondacks of New York and beyond, even up into Maine. So to me, if I was to try to find a route, a way to travel without being seen generally, those would be the things that I would use, because animals are known to use the routes of easiest travel. They're not necessarily crashing through the heaviest cover. So, like I said, that's why I like to ask people from all different parts of the country, you know, have they experienced such a thing or have they noticed such a thing?
Yeah. I think we touched on this last week or the week before. We also said you get a little bit of a height advantage because a lot of railroad tracks are built up. So if something's going to be walking along it, you can see to the right and left sometimes. And I know the Minnesota Finding Bigfoot show, one of the sightings was someone driving along a road and seeing a dark, tall figure sitting down on the railroad tracks. So one of the sightings here was actually on a railroad.
That was a great question.
Okay, thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
Yeah, thank you.
Talk to you. See ya.
You know, the whole path of least resistance, you know, that animals typically will take at times. I almost feel like Bigfoot is somewhat forced to do the opposite generally. You know, they have to take the path that's, you know, the most resistance, the least traveled, you know, if they want to avoid humans and other things. But I guess when you're out on some of those railroad tracks or desolate, some of them aren't even being used, and you can hear or see a train coming from a mile away, so I suppose it would work out in their favor.
Yeah, according to the caller, I mean, their railroad tracks were like dismantled, so I mean they could you know travel that and not even be seen at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's I love the question. It was a great question, and it's just one of those things that whenever I do field stuff, I would go out. That's the first place I would look. I'd look at electrical right-of-ways and gas right-of-ways and railroad tracks and stuff. So. So.
Interesting. Oh, what else do we want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to get the story out because I thought it was funny. When Chris called me the chupacabra hunter, and I love the story because, like, whenever I went up to the 13th annual Bigfoot conference, being hosted by Don Keating, I went up there with Luke and Craig and Jerry Heston, and we went up there, and I was clearly the only Spanish guy there, you know, and I was sitting there. I think I can't remember who's talking. I think it was Lauren Coleman. John Bennernagel, which I love, he was there, and I can't think of who else was talking. But after every time someone spoke, they had it on the stage, and they had whoever was speaking was selling like books or any kind of things. You could go up there after they would talk and go up there and try to purchase these items. And so I went up there to go on top of the stage to go start looking, you know, through the books. And Lauren Coleman walked up to me and he says, "Hey, you're Spanish, right?" And I looked around and I go, "Yeah, I'm Spanish." He says to me, and he'll probably debate this, so he'll probably like say, "I didn't say that," but I remember him saying to me, "What do you think about the chupacabra?" And I said, "I don't think about the chupacabra." And so I told him, "I don't think about it, because I don't. That's something in Puerto Rico." So. And so ever since then, you know, Chris and Steve have been doing that joke with me, you know, "I don't think about the chupacabra." So that was my claim to fame on that one. So anyway, he'll probably call in and see.
So that was the 13th annual. What are we at now? What was this year's? Anyone?
26th, maybe.
Yeah.
Was it?
The 26th.
I think so. I don't think Don's running it anymore. I think Mark's running it. Mark DeWorth.
That's right, because I attended last year, and I believe that was the year that it was kind of a turnover, where Don Keating did turn over to Mark DeWorth, who I like very much. I like Mark DeWorth. He's a real cool guy.
He is. He's very cool.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah, he seems passionate.
He is. He's a very good guy, and whenever I went up there, I was new into Bigfoot, and I asked him some questions, and he was, you know, very helpful and helped me out on a lot of stuff, so he's a good guy.
Oh, so you're old school. You're an OG Bigfooter.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you can say that. It was weird because, like, whenever I went up to the conference, I met Eric Altman, Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, and at the time, and it's not no knock on Eric, but he was kind of big, and I know he's lost a lot of weight, and so that was a while back. And I met Eric and Don and Mike Frizzell. He was running the Enigma project, and I wish I could remember some of the other people I met. It was kind of neat whenever we first got there, because he had it at some motel place, and he rented out a conference room. And as soon as we got into town, everybody drove in and got their rooms, and everybody that was a Bigfooter had their doors open. And so you'd walk down this corridor, and you would just walk into people's, you know, room and just start talking about Bigfoot. And we walked down, and we met up with other people. And at the time, it was so strange to hear about Bigfoot in Texas. Everybody was yelling, "Where are those Texas boys at?" You know, they were yelling at us and stuff. And so we were like kind of like a celebrity for a little bit, and it was kind of neat. But yeah, it was a great experience, and got to meet Don and all the other guys, and I met so many people there, and I just wish I could remember everybody that I met, and I probably just forgot about it. So
yeah, it's pretty much the biggest deal in the Bigfoot world every year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, second to the Sasquatch Symposium. Are they still doing that?
Is that the Oklahoma one?
No, the one up in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, I haven't heard about
that
one. I know they
a lot of conferences yearly, it seems.
Yeah, now.
Especially
back,
in Ohio.
I think back in 99, there was only a few. There was only, you know, the Sasquatch Symposium, and there was Don Keating's, and I was thinking, I think Eric Altman did one, too. He did the East Coast. I don't know if Eric's still doing that.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So at the time, I think in 99, there was only like three or four. And then we started doing one that next year. And so we wanted to do one down south. And I think there was another one in Florida. I can't remember who's doing it.
Yeah, so we got the Skunk Ape Conference coming up this year with Stacy Brown and Tim Fasano and a bunch of people.
Right on, man.
I think that's the first annual, I believe. Yeah, it's another hot spot.
Is that one in Florida, too?
Yep.
Right on.
Yep.
Are you gonna make it down to that?
I wish. No, I don't think so. I'd like to go to the Ohio one next year, though.
Yeah, I'd like to go to that one, too, again. See how much stuff's changed since I last was there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a good time. Salt Fork Park is just, you know, like the footer mecca. It's just always got people squatching there and
where
going
Dax
there. I mean, don't they?
His footprint that we were talking about earlier.
And, don't they have an area they call Bigfoot Ridge? It's a part of the campground.
Yeah, there is. I saw the sign for it today. I never really made my way around the park or anything like that. I never went exploring or anything like that. We usually go up to hang out and have family time more than anything, but I did actually find the Bigfoot Ridge sign this last time we were up there, and it did look like it was, you know, in an area that I can't remember what the sign above it said, but yeah, some sort of campground. I know there's various places within the park that people will hold as their, you know, hot spots or personal hot spots or where they feel there's a lot of activity or possibility within.
J-Mac, Richard Porter saying that you should do your show from the conference.
Yeah. That would be fun. I would love to do that. I'm going to have to look up when that is.
And you could just, like, grab people and just, like, bring them over to the table and stuff and say, hey, what's up, and all kinds of. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would. That would be awesome. I love Florida, too. It's, like, one of my favorite places on the planet. Let's see. The Florida Skunk Ape Conference 2014... September 19th and 20th in Orlando.
Hmm.
I guess Meldrum, Lyle Blackburn, Stacy Brown, Robert Robinson, Bill Brock, Fasano, David Lauer. Be a lot of people.
Sounds like a pretty good card.
Yeah. Yeah, I know people have been asking Stacy to do something like that, and he just eventually, I think, organized it, put it together, and
he's big time now.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's Florida makes sense to me for being a, you know, Bigfoot Skunk Ape area. Real
I've never
swampy.
Been there, but I always wanted to go. I've never been there, but I always wanted to go.
Yeah, you know, obviously along the ocean, it's all cities, but when you get towards the middle of Florida, there's a lot of swampy stuff, and people just don't go into those swamps. You know, you might not come out.
No.
You got to know what you're doing in there, and with the snakes and spiders and gators. When I lived in Georgia, I'd always be like, why aren't there kids playing in these woods, you know? Because up here we always played in the woods when we were kids, but there's reasons down there.
Snakes and gators.
Yeah, and they got those poisonous spiders, too, which are brutal. I don't know if they're recluses, I think. You get bit by one of those, you got to go to the hospital quick. So how's the weather been in Texas lately?
It's been warm, but it hasn't been, you know, too bad. You know, I like the heat. That's me, and I'm like a lizard. I gotta have heat, and so it's been like probably the mid 90s, which is okay with me, because like usually it's like 110, 103 or something. But we try not to do if whenever I was doing Bigfoot field research, we try not to do that much in the summertime, because it's just too brutal.
Yeah,
it's way too brutal. So we kind of do it like in the fall and some like a little bit in the winter. But when I first got into it, 99, man, I was going in June and July. And I was like, you know, had a ton of water and a lot of hats and stuff. So it was brutal, and I was like super passionate about it. And I was, man, this is not smart, but.
Yeah.
And so you say that you haven't done much in the way of Bigfoot since 2009, is that right?
Yes, I was doing some stuff. I moved to Oklahoma in 2009. I moved up to Tulsa, and I was doing some sighting reports up there. And I moved back to Texas in 2011. And so I've been back in Texas. So I haven't really done anything since then. And I've been kind of on the paranormal side, and I got recruited by Kendall Wickerson, like I was telling earlier. And I kind of got back into it to do, you know, to help people. And I'm kind of learning about a lot of paranormal stuff, because she knows a lot about paranormal, and she's had a lot of experiences. And so I'm trying to be like, you know, just be a sponge with whenever she's talking or whenever she's showing me stuff. So I'm learning a lot of stuff on the paranormal side, but I'm doing a lot of reading on my own and starting to experience certain things. And I mean, it's we've got some cases that we're doing right now. We had a case last weekend. It was a resident's house, and then we were going to do one this past weekend, but I think we had to postpone it. And it was the cemetery that we were going to do on. It was kind of strange because I kind of grew up in this area, and I know when I say this, it's going to sound kind of bad, but when I was a kid, I lived in this area, and I was spray painting this basketball court, and I was being, you know, a bad kid, and I was spray painting, and the Parks and Recreation was pulling up on me right when I was spray painting, and they caught me, and so I took off running away from them, and I ran through this trailer park, and I was going to cut to this trailer park, jump this fence, and go through the woods and double back to my house so that way they wouldn't catch me. And so as I was running through this trailer park, I jumped the fence, and I ran through this field, and it was tombstones everywhere. And so I looked around, and it was like they were dating back, you know, early 1800s, late 1700s. So I took off running through this field, and I went home. And as I got older, I always wanted to go back and investigate this area. So I went a couple months ago to go talk to the owners of the cemetery, and it was still with the trailer park. So I went up talking to the trailer park property manager, and she told me, oh, I need to talk to you. And I wasn't able to talk to her at the time. I sent Kendall, and Kendall went to go talk to her, and it turns out that most of that trailer park is haunted. And so we did, the property manager had done some research on it, and she pulled up, like, you know, documents and who used to own the land and She pulled up all kinds of stuff, and it was like it was owned by this family called the Hortons that had moved, I guess, from Europe there, and they settled there. And so all the plots were pretty much all predominantly the Hortons, and they had a couple friends buried there and a couple slaves. And so the property manager was telling Kendall that they occasionally see like a little girl walking around the trailer park. And so when someone goes to approach her, she would disappear, or she would be sitting on top of a roof. And the maintenance guy saw her and grabbed the ladder and pulled it up to the trailer and you know, went up the ladder, and then she was gone. So, and she was telling Kendall also as well, there's about 7 trailers that are not, they can't keep people in it. And so we had that investigation coming up, and so I'm kind of excited about it because I'm going back to my old neighborhood, and it's had so much history in my neighborhood, and I didn't even know it. And so I'm hoping that we didn't bite off more than we could chew, because I have a funny feeling when we go out there and do the investigation in the cemetery, people are going to catch wind of it, and they're going to come to us and say, hey, I got something going on. And so hopefully we'll have enough boots on the ground to cover it. So that's really exciting. I'm real excited about that. So
that is exciting. And what other sort, what generally does paranormal cover?
What do we cover, or what does paranormal cover?
What do you cover? Well, cover? We'll stick with that. You would accept calls concerning what?
I would accept calls. I would take any calls from anybody concerning kids. If it has to do with kids, I would take it no matter what. If they felt it was a witch, or they thought it was, you know, a ghost or a demon or whatever, I would take it. If we got calls, especially pertaining to kids, we drop what we're doing and we try to go help them right away. I was mentioning earlier that I did get a call from somebody from Oklahoma that said he had paranormal, and then he said that he was being attacked by some witches. And so it was kind of far for us to go, and I was trying to find like a local group that could help him. But at the same time, I was kind of assessing what he was telling me, and I was kind of going with, I said, you know what, if we went to go do this investigation, we would probably do him more harm than anything, because, you know, I don't know where his mindset is. I didn't know his, you know, his history. I had asked him if he had any, if he ever been committed, if he's on medication. He told me no, but when I talked to his family members, they told me that he was on medication. So, okay. That being said, I said, you know what, I would probably do more harm to him than anything. So I talked to him, and I said, hey, we're not going to be able to do the investigation unless you go seek some help. And once you do that, once we eliminate that, then we can go help you. And so he wasn't too happy with that, and he told me that that, you know, that I was wrong and I shouldn't do that. And I told him, well, you know, you're entitled to your opinion, and I wish you the best of luck. And if you still need to talk, you can call me, and I'll talk to you. So he texted me from time to time, and he sends me random pictures about, you know, his house and stuff, and I take them and I look at them and I text them back. And so, I mean, we take any kind of calls that pertain to kids, but it's a case by case. I think we look at stuff and we want to make sure it's paranormal. And I know Kendall has got some couple calls that were kind of questionable, and we talked to them, and we advised this other person to seek some help first before we can go and help, because we don't want to do that. We don't just jump on any case, and we try to assess it the best we can, and we also provide people with, you know, whatever denomination they want, whether it's, you know, a Catholic priest or a Baptist minister or a rabbi or something like that. So we have some people on call that we actually call and say, hey, we need help, and they would come out and help us. So.
Okay.
Nice. And that's the Pentex group?
Yeah, Pentex.org is our group. And I can't say enough good things about Kendall and the guys in that group. And the guys in that group is kind of like where I wanted to be with the TBRC. And, you know, we don't talk to each other that often, but when we do, we're really close. And we take care of each other. And And it's just a good group of people, really good group of people. And I just can't say enough good things about them.
Is the TBRC, are they pro-kill now?
You know, that's a good question. I know when I helped started them, we were not. We were against killing, and I'm not sure that this group is.
Just sounds like I've heard of some Texas group that's got their name out there that is pro-kill, that's ruffling some feathers in the community.
Well, that's probably, you're probably talking about the Gulf Coast. I'm not going to
okay.
say who they are, because I don't want to promote them at all, and I just, no knock on them. I don't really believe in a lot of the stuff that they believe in. And because whenever I first got into Bigfoot stuff, I looked up, you know, Texas Bigfoot stuff on the internet, and that stuff came up about Lou Gross, and then it came up with the Gulf Coast. So when I went to their website, and you know, still knock on them, like I said, they're allowed to do whatever they want to believe in, and their website, when it came up, it was flashing red, you know, that they believe in certain things, and it was like flashing, and to me that's a flag. To me, that's okay. I don't know that much about Bigfoot, but that's gonna deter me from going to this website and looking more inside it. So they were talking about, they were, you know, for killing a Bigfoot to preserve it and I guess find its species and stuff. And so I was immediately turned off by it. And I can understand why Luke left that group and formed his own group. And so you're probably talking about that group.
Okay. What's the group that Craig Woolheater is a part of?
He is a part of the newly formed Texas Bigfoot Research Center. So he was a part of the group that I helped put together, and I assisted on putting together. And apparently, I guess for some reason, he's no longer part of the current group now. So
and that's
not a
different
part of
from the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy.
Yes.
Okay.
It's different. It's different. It's got Gino Napoli and Monica Rollins, and I don't know who else is in the group, but I think he's forming the group again. I'm not really sure. I think I chatted with him on Facebook a couple months ago, and it was really short. So.
Okay, a lot of groups down there.
Yeah.
In the Lone Star State.
So how many people are in the Dogman group?
Well, in the Facebook group, I think there's like 145, but there's kind of just a few sporadic people here and there that are actually into the research part of it.
So it's you and a few other people?
Yeah, it's just me and a couple other people in my group, and then got Linda out in Wisconsin, and this Donna Fink out in Wisconsin. She's got a couple people. Yeah, I'm just more focusing on taking reports, collaborating data, and, I haven't been able to get out lately to where I want to go, which is southern Wisconsin. Got a couple reports here over the years, but not much. The heat of the actions in Michigan and Wisconsin. It's just, you know, it's hard to get people together. Everyone's got their own schedules. You know how it goes. And
yeah.
And
had you ever,
we're not
had
a,
you ever,
no grants yet.
Yeah. You still going to do that Kickstarter thing, or maybe? No?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to, you know, get my buddy's input and then go from there. Something small, you know. Because no one's really documented every site and investigated every area, which I think would be cool to do.
I was going to tell you that I did, after I left the TBRC, I did a, it was myself and Ken Marvel and another guy, I can't remember his name. We did a sighting report up in Brown Springs, Oklahoma. I don't know if you've ever heard of that place. It's right next to the casino that's right off, I think, is that 20? No, 35? It's right off 35 that goes up north from Texas to Oklahoma. And there was a report that we got when we were with the TVRC that there was a lady from Gainesville, which is south of Oklahoma, from Gainesville, Texas, that was, she was murdered in Brown Springs, and her legs were broken, and she had human DNA inside her. That's the story we got from some sheriff or something. I can't remember where. I think one of my colleagues got it and gave it to me, and we kind of ran with it. And we went up north to Oklahoma, right next to this casino. And the story in the area, the legend in the area was that there was a wolf man or a dog man in that area, and it was conjured up by the Native Americans and the early settlers at the time. And the story was going that there was settlers going through there, and some of the American settlers had raped a Native American girl, and they wanted to settle there. And so the Native Americans had cursed the land because there were like springs that were there that people could drink out of, and they had cursed the land that those springs were no longer viable to drink. So that's why they call it Brown Springs. And they had cursed also that there was a dog man that was covering that area, and that it would kill settlers or attack settlers in that area. And I tried to look up some of the stuff. I wasn't able to find any of it, but I just heard it from town people were telling me about it. And so that was the story in that area, that there was a dog man with a snout there. And I went up there to go investigate it, and it was right on the Red River. And so we were there, and it was getting pretty dark, and it's a pretty shady area, you know, because when you pull into the area right next to the Red River, I parked my car and I got out and I like looked around, and it was, you could see like needles and syringes everywhere. So there's a real negative vibe there, you know. I said, okay, we have to be careful here. So we went around, we saw, I think that we found some footprints that were in the area. I didn't have any caching material, so we didn't cache them. And so I did a couple calls, and I got some calls back from the Texas side yelling back at us. And this was like broad daylight, like around noon or something. And I never went back there, but that was one of the incidents that I went to go investigate that I had heard from a police official, or I can't remember, it was a sheriff or something. And so I think the lady was murdered like in, I don't know, like in the early 80s or early 90s or something like that. But that was the story I got. And when I tried to talk to the sheriff in the town, they wouldn't talk to us. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Supposedly the police in southern Wisconsin have a file called the Werewolf File.
Really?
From all the different calls and stuff that they've been getting. And one thing that I found interesting down there was the sightings somewhat match the Native American effigy mounds.
Mm.
That's a interesting correlation, because it's one of the richer areas in America, southern Wisconsin, for the mounds. And that's kind of interesting. And, you know, and then you have some people that think they're a type of Bigfoot, you know. So there's all sorts of kind of little camps of what people think the dogman could be.
What's the Native American name for the dogman? You know? I'm curious. I don't know, so.
Yeah, I don't really know if, you know, it was that big of a part of their culture. You know, I think they had some of the, you know, they had the belief that some people could transform into one.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I've talked to a lot of Native American guys that believe Bigfoot can do the same thing too, can turn into an owl or a raccoon or a possum or something. And I've talked to lots of people like that.
Yeah, and, you know, some of these stories, too, were brought to the Midwest with the German settlers. They had that werewolf stories already. I guess they call it like the, was it the Wendigo or Wendigo?
Wendigo, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I thought
I
that
that's kind of the
term had been taken out of context as far as Bigfoot had gone anyway. I thought that was maybe more of a spiritual being taken out of context and made to, you know, align with Bigfoot as far as a Native American legend. I don't
Rambo
know that
one,
sure.
Yeah. I was saying Rambo 1 was saying shapeshifters, and I was going to say that too, and I just
yeah.
didn't dawn on me.
Shapeshifters.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's, I guess it's something that's been around, but I mean, some people, like I said, think they're actually a type of Bigfoot, and that, you know, perhaps they're just a little bit smaller and have a little different head and ears through evolution or adaptation. And then there's some people think that they're just an unidentified flesh and blood canine, some, you know, maybe like a wolf dog crossbreed or something that we've yet, you know, to discover or identify through science, you know, that can just walk on two legs here and there. Because a
right.
lot of times people see them on two legs, but they'll also go down on four.
And that's the same with Bigfoot. There
yeah.
are a lot of the same, you know, stories. Although for some reason the dogman sightings are just a tad more terrifying in most cases.
what did I read? I think
scary.
Sharon Day, I think, wrote something where she was like, "The only thing Bigfoot fears is a dog man."
I mean, dog man's 10 times scarier. They, you know, there are reports of them like eating people's cars. Just, I mean,
nice,
you know,
nice.
Obviously, we don't know that that was the case, but that's what's reported.
I was going to ask, I was wondering, because like I remember talking to a guy at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. He was, I wish I remember his name, such long ago, and he was based out of Jersey, and he was telling me that he had thought that, and I wanted to see what you guys thought of it, that like some of the Bigfoot in the air, like in the area that they didn't migrate or something, and they inbreed with their own kind or their own offspring. And then whenever they had offspring, they were deformed. So do you guys think that the dog man is like a deformed Bigfoot or?
Tawny.
I personally think it's a canine. I mean, there's not, wolves got exterminated in Wisconsin in like the 1800s, and
mm-hmm.
they're now in northern Wisconsin, and that's where the supposed Bigfoots are too. Southern Wisconsin. You know, Linda has some Bigfoot sightings documented, I guess, but the BFRO doesn't have many. I think it's a canine. I think it's some sort of, maybe even if people aren't used to seeing wolves, you know, wolf stood up on two legs or something, or maybe a couple got down there, or it just could be some sort of, I think it's some sort of unidentified or canine, but I don't know. Once you start looking into the other stuff, when it matches the effigy mounts, that kind of gets creepy, you know?
Yeah, it does. Do you remember seeing, I can't remember, I think it was Paranormal Witness. There was a story on Paranormal Witness about some werewolves.
Yeah.
Do you remember seeing that one?
Yeah, I did see that.
What location was that? I don't remember. What location do you recall?
I don't remember. It wasn't in the Midwest, I don't believe, though.
That was a creepy story. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was. That was really, yeah, that was pretty intense. I got like really good ratings too.
Yeah.
Where it kept them hostage in their house all night.
Yeah, because I saw that episode and I immediately thought about Linda. I said, I wonder if Linda knows about this story.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. But it's just, you know, it's like anything. We need more evidence to put together to... They could be a type of Bigfoot, too, that has evolved to be smaller with pointier ears for better hearing to live in these smaller patches of woods that are in southern Wisconsin, because northern Wisconsin, you have big national forests, but southern Wisconsin, it's more isolated, smaller patches and farms, you know, and when you ever, I guess Lauren Coleman was saying, whenever you get farms and forest meat, you get the dog man.
Yeah.
Well, Ramble 1 says it was in Ohio. Okay, so it was in the Midwest, but...
Right on, Ramble 1. He's good. I like him.
Yeah, that was a cool episode.
Yeah, it was. Because I know they haven't done a lot of Bigfoot stuff on there, but I think some of the Bigfoot stories on there are really, really good, too. They had that one story about that sheriff that went into, I think it was in the Pacific Northwest, and he went out, he got off work early and then walked through the woods, and he got shadowed by a Bigfoot and kind of got chased out.
Yeah, it's scary when you're the one getting chased. It's just, I don't know, it seems flesh and blood. There's that one story in Wisconsin of the DNR worker. It was on Monster Quest and some other things, you know, where he, I think he took lie detector tests and all that, where he was picking up deer carcasses off the side of the road for the city and had thrown a small one in the back of the truck and was inside doing the paperwork, and all of a sudden the truck started rattling. He didn't think much of it, and it started rattling again, and he looked in the rearview mirror and saw the scariest thing ever. And he just took off, and like the ramps, a ramp that he used to slide the carcasses up flew out of the back of his truck.
Wow.
And he got down the road a ways, and he was like, wait a minute, I got to go get that ramp, you know. I can. So he turned around, and the ramp and the deer were gone. And he didn't know what the hell happened, but he described it as kind of like the head of a bear, but the body of a wolf. And they don't have bears really in southern Wisconsin either. You're gonna get maybe a rare thing, but
yeah, I would probably take off too.
Like a bear wolf.
So
yeah, you know, all these cryptids are just fascinating. You know, you get bored with Bigfoot, you move on to Dogman.
Or if that, the Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Or Nessie. You don't think about it.
How could you get bored with Bigfoot?
Yeah, that's true. That's why I don't think about the Chupacabra.
Bigfoot is. I used to say that it was the gateway cryptid, but then that was, you know, a year ago now, and I've gotten a little bit into secondary cryptids, and they are interesting, but not as interesting as Bigfoot as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's the Bigfoot. I got interested in the Dogman just because I've been to those areas in Wisconsin, I think, several times. It's somewhat close to home. It just, I don't know, I think it brought the fascination a little bit more to heart.
And I think that will, too, because, you know, hearing local stories around here about you know, different subjects that I'm not necessarily interested in, it does pique your interest whenever you start to hear things, and then you do, you know, it's worth going and checking out, or, you know, investigating a little into or trying to find out more, because, you know, ghosts aren't my favorite thing. I just pretend they're not, there's no such thing, whether there is or isn't,
right.
Because I feel like I'm better off that way, just in case. But
well, that's why we got people like Bob.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's actually funny, too, because there were some things going on just a few weeks ago, and I've lived in my home for 7 years, and like I said, I don't even acknowledge that sort of thing. I just completely ignore it, even if I do have a little bit of a, you know, like, what was that? But, yeah, I'll completely ignore it. And so I started telling a couple of my friends over the telephone what had happened, and then something weird happened after that, so I'm not even going to repeat it right now over the telephone because I'm afraid someone's listening to me. See, how weird is that? But you know what I mean?
I was going to ask you some questions, too, but I guess I'm not going to do it now.
I will tell you. I will. What happened was I was hearing singing late at night. I tend to stay up a little bit later than everyone else in the house, and I will sit down in the living room, and I heard singing. And I have children, so I assumed it was the older of the children, you know, staying up a little bit later in her bed, and it was beautiful singing. And I heard it again maybe a week or so later, and so I brought it up to her, and I said, hey, could you go to bed at night and not lay in your bed and sing, please? I was like, as lovely as it may sound. And she was like, are you serious right now? Because you're freaking me out. And I was like, okay, let's just shut up then. So, and then I was telling a few friends about that, and it could be completely coincidental, and that's absolutely fine if it is, but I was sitting, and then that night I'm, like, listening and waiting, and my shower curtain fell. I swear to you, my shower curtain fell, and it scared the crap out of me. And it could be a complete coincidence, but
right.
So I don't delve too far just in case there is a such, you know, thing as
I know. I was just going to ask you really quick. I know we only got like 2 minutes to go, and I just wanted to ask you, could you narrow it down where the singing was coming from at all?
Yes, it was definitely coming from upstairs.
Okay. Do you know where, like, the power to the house comes in, or if there's a breaker box, or?
Yes.
Okay. Because usually on stuff like that, usually any kind of energy or something, or any kind of anything that gives off EMF that could manifest a sound or an image or anything like that. Because that was the question I was going to ask you. Where?
So would you say perhaps something like a carbon monoxide detector? That gives off sound, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it just like depends. Like certain like breaker boxes, old ovens, microwaves, power lines or even like wiring that's not really insulated can give off EMF, and then once it gives off EMF, it's like a Roman candle to ghosts and spirits. Once they see that, they're like drawn to it. It's just conjecture what I'm going off on, because that's usually whenever I do investigations and I come across people that say they see like an image or a voice, I usually try to narrow down the part of the house where there's a lot of power.
Okay.
That's usually the way I do it, so.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was definitely coming from upstairs, and I still think that I might want to interrogate the youngin' a little bit more, but she was like, are you, I don't know, her response wasn't what I expected.
All right, well, we're down to our last minute here, and I want to thank Robert Dominguez for joining us.
I appreciate it, guys, I really do.
Thank you.
And you all can check out his websites. You got Night Watchers, and then you have the Pintex, the Paranormal Investigations of North Texas. And any last thing you'd like to say, Robert, before we get off the air here?
I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity. I did my shout-outs. Thank you for the opportunity for giving me the talk. And anytime you want me back on, I'm more than happy to come back on, so.
Awesome, yeah. Keep us up to
date.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone in the chat room, for joining us. We'll see you next week for another episode of Monster X Radio.